From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, open lines where you become the guest of the program. Here's what's happening. Man, there are strange things going on all over the planet. Now the Chinese military has deployed an advanced surface-to-air missile system to one of its contested islands in the South China Sea. Now, this according to civilian satellite imagery. More evidence now that China is increasingly militarizing the islands in the South China Sea, ramping up tensions in that region. Taiwan's not happy about it. Japan's not happy about it. And we're not happy about it. Iran's defense minister met in Moscow with Russian President Vladimir Putin about delivery of the advanced S-300 air defense system and the purchase of powerful offensive weapons, including Russia's most sophisticated tank and jet fighters. Russia, media, and two intelligence officials confirmed the meeting between Putin and the brigadier general from Iran, believed to be the architect, by the way, of the 1983 terror bombing that killed 220 U.S. Marines and 21 other service members in Beirut, Lebanon. A United Nations resolution passed in July, days after the landmark nuclear agreement between Iran and six other world powers, including us, forbids Iran from making conventional arms sales for the next 5 years. Well, it seems like they're violating that already. Top oil exporters Russia and Saudi Arabia have agreed to freeze output levels, but said the deal was contingent on other producers joining in, which is a major sticking point with Iran, absent from talks and determined to raise production. The Saudi, Russian, Qatari, Venezuelan oil ministers announced the proposal after a previously undisclosed meeting in Doha. It could become the first joint OPEC and non-OPEC deal in 15 years, all aimed at tackling a growing oversupply of crude and helping prices recover from their lowest in over a decade. Veteran homicide investigators in New York and Washington, D.C. now are questioning the way local and federal authorities in Texas handled the death of Supreme Court Justice Scalia. This is what they say. It's not unreasonable to ask for an autopsy in this case, particularly knowing who he is. That from a retired Brooklyn homicide detective. She went on to say, look, he wasn't at home, there were no witnesses to his death, and there was no reported explanation for why a pillow is over his head. So I think under the circumstances, it's not unreasonable to request an autopsy. This is a strange case, folks. Strange. Scalia, of course, was a conservative justice. He will be replaced, if the president is allowed to do this, with a more liberal justice. Something weird about this whole situation. I mean, he may have died under natural causes, as they're saying. He wasn't the world's best health. But when you die in bed, do you die with a pillow naturally over your head? Strange. A therapy that retains the body's immune system to fight cancer has provoked excitement after more than, listen to this, 90% of terminally ill patients, okay? That means these folks are going to die soon. 90% of them reportedly have gone into remission. White blood cells were taken from patients with leukemia, modified in the lab, and then put back in. Stem cells, something we've been talking about with Christian Wild for gosh knows how many years, Christian.
Well, I would say 1999, probably.
Over in St. Louis. And then here we are. This is amazing. Tell us real quickly what the procedure is.
Well, this is a topic, George, exactly what I've been preparing for Coast to Coast listeners for our Cancer Breakthrough show. I think it's scheduled for March 6th.
Sunday night. That's right.
Yeah. So there are several, probably seven of the most exciting breakthroughs that have medical science very excited that we're going to talk about. I had a difficult time sleeping last night, so I got up to do some work. And what was on my mind was the St. Jude's TV commercial I had seen earlier in the evening, mostly because I was writing about the subject of cancer. You know, the one that features all those brave, innocent little cancer victims.
Yes, they have those tight video shots of them.
That's describing their individual types of cancer. I can't help but feel for the parents, as well as the children, of course, but neuroblastoma, lymphoma, rhabdomyosarcoma, and, of course, leukemia. I can't imagine what their parents go through. So to awake this morning to today's big news, George, and it was big news that you just reported.
Huge, huge.
90% of the leukemia patients in the trial realized an amazing 100% reversal of their disease.
And these are terminally ill patients.
Oh,
they're ready to check out.
They know it. Their parents know it, and they're holding on to hope. And hopefully this will come in time for many of them. Many of them, of course, won't get this benefit. But this is progress never imagined before, and from what I've been learning, I think it's pretty safe to say that this is only the beginning of what lies ahead. The two fields are immunotherapy and gene therapy. Manipulating genes, removing an amount of the patient's cells and then multiplying them into the millions, and then re-infusing the healthy cells back in the patient.
Well, we've seen what it happens with heart patients, as you have brought to our table, and we've done some remarkable things for those people. Now it's tackling cancer. There's no end to this incredible medicine.
There's no end, and there's many other cancers that we'll talk about on March 6th. Northwestern, you and I have reported many times on the 31 autoimmune diseases, which they have been treating successfully over the past 4 or 5 years. So remember, prevention is the key in cancer. And as Dr. Agarwal at MD Anderson Cancer has told us, in 50 years of research, we have seen no cancer that has not benefited from turmeric. It destroys cancer cells by causing them to self-destruct in a process called apoptosis. And the reason I mention that is because many of the trials right now are combining as co-therapy the biological drug along with turmeric and getting an outstanding result.
What an amazing story. I will see you, full show with you, a couple hours at least, March 6th, Sunday night.
You got it, George.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kristen, and thank you for your good work. Take a bow, my friend. We've been talking for 17 years about stem cells and their ability to fight all kinds of afflictions, and look what's happening right now. 90% of the terminally ill cancer patients with leukemia have gone into remission. George Gaines, now you might not know the name, but he's a character actor whose six-decade career included Tootsie, all 7 Police Academy films, and more than 85 episodes of Punky Brewster. Has died in North Bend, Washington. He was 98 years old. Really funny actor. I liked him a lot. Earth is entering a stream of high-speed solar winds. This is causing, they say, a minor class of geomagnetic storms around the Arctic Circle. But it's time now for Dr. Sky, Stephen Cates, and his weekly astronomy update. Hello there, Doctor.
Well, George, there's so many wonderful things to talk about, and I thought it appropriate to remind our Coast listeners about the 3rd anniversary and a few days of the Russian Chelyabinsk fireball. Now, what's interesting about this, George, is the object that it did hit the Earth was the largest object from space to hit the Earth since the 1908 Tunguska event. Folks, it was 66 feet across. And, George, this is interesting, too. It had the kinetic energy, get a load of this, of 500 kilotons. Now, that's as large as the largest pure fissionable nuclear bomb that we ever tested. Back in 1952, for people who may remember, we tested something called Ivy Mike out in the Pacific Ocean, 500 kilotons. And the interesting thing is people are wondering where this object came from. Latest speculation, George, is that this asteroid object, this fireball, broke off a larger asteroid and came through this thing called the gravity keyhole back around 1982, causing it to hit the Earth. But there's a reason for this story. We have another close encounter, as we always talk about here on Coast. Get a load of this. Another asteroid body, known as 2013 TX68, will make an exceptionally close passage to the Earth, George, around March 5th through the 10th.
Coming up. Well,
astronomers are not totally sure about the closeness, but get a load of this. Some of the reports I'm reading and getting verified within 11,000 miles to 19,000 miles of the Earth, well inside the geosynchronous area. And if it were to hit, and it's not expected to, thank goodness, it would have a 1 megaton effect of explosive force, creating a crater, George, hopefully not to hit the Earth, of course, but maybe 1,800 feet. And folks, the final object, George, to look at right now, keeping craters in perspective, if the listeners look at the moon right now with a small telescope and binoculars, right along the light and dark line is a giant crater called Copernicus. It's coming into sunrise right now, 57 miles across, 2 miles deep. It's one of the best illustrations, George, of what a giant object 810 million years ago did to the Earth. I learned so much more about this at DrSky.com and, of course, our aviation site for photorecon.net. Amazing stuff in our skies.
Thank you, Stephen. Talk to you next week. Astronomy updates. That's exciting. It's like being back at science school, isn't it? Science class. If you go to our website at coasttocoastam.com, look at the highlight reel picture. A couple of drunk pranksters in the United Kingdom went to what was called Jurassic Garden. They had models of dinosaurs there. And they dragged a 20-foot model of a Triceratops. That's the dinosaur with the big horns. They dragged him out into the middle of a street, and motorists just went ballistic. They actually thought there was a real Triceratops in the road, just standing there. Well, they've arrested the drunks, and everything's back to normal again there. But take a look at the picture at coasttocoastam.com. The U.S. Federal Reserve's newest policymaker and a former point man for the government's bailout of the financial industry called on lawmakers to take radical action to rein in banks and protect taxpayers. In his first speech as the Minneapolis Fed, Neil Kashkari, a Goldman Sachs executive before he worked at the U.S. Treasury Department, has urged Congress to consider bold rules, including the breaking up of the nation's largest banks to avoid bailouts. What an amazing story, and what does he know that we might not? Well, Catherine Austin Fitz might know, and we'll check in with her next on Coast to Coast AM. Quite an evening of information for you tonight, followed by open lines at the end. Catherine Austin Fitz is the publisher of the Solari Report and managing member of the Solari Investment Advisory Services. She has served as managing director and member of the board of directors of the Wall Street Investment Bank, Dillon Reed & Company. She's a noted author, Dillon Reed, and the aristocracy of stock profits as well. And we're going to talk with her about things that affect you financially, and we'll take calls with her next hour. Catherine, welcome back.
George, it's great to be back.
Did you swallow a frog?
No, I flew back from California. The only time I ever get anything is when I fly domestically. And I've got this, but you know, a lot of people have it. I have clients all over the country who have it.
It should kind of sound like Lauren Bacall.
I know. Do you think it's a good look? I've been thinking of getting a new wardrobe.
Yeah, you might as well. What the heck?
It's like a 40s thing, right?
You're going to be okay for a couple hours?
Oh, yeah. I feel great.
All right. Well, don't mind if I throw in a couple little rivets every once in a while. Unbelievable. But, you know, this thing hit me over the weekend, too. I was traveling, and, you know, that airplane air is horrible, and I got all stuffed up yesterday.
Well, I would love to know, because I never get sick, and the only time I get sick is when I fly domestically. Doesn't happen on international flights.
It's like they're pumping something in the air to us.
I don't know.
Another conspiracy. Hey, I want to ask you about a lot of things before we get into our topics tonight.
There's so much to talk about.
But I want to get your reaction to Justice Scalia's passing in that they really rushed things, you know, declaring him dead and then, you know, no autopsy and now,
well,
you know,
look at the statute,
pillow on his face. Jeez.
Yeah, if you look at the statutes in Texas, they have to have an autopsy. I think it's the law to have an autopsy in that fact pattern. But if you look at all the different high strangeness, and given what's riding on, you know, on his being on the courts or not on the court, I would say it looks beyond suspicious.
I would too. I wonder what type of legalese they were working on the Supreme Court where he could have tipped it or maybe he ticked somebody off a long time ago. Who knows?
Well, we will see once we see what emerges. But there's several things. The Supreme Court had just given a stay to the president's Clean Power Plan, which was giving the coal companies a very narrow reprieve, and now that could change. Of course, he was a big supporter of gun control, and the administration has tried very hard to get that.
Yeah.
And finally, we just see Rubio and Jeb Bush, hiss, 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 proposing and floating the idea of a constitutional convention, which I'm sure Scalia would have just, thought was a very bad idea. So there are a couple things that what I would call Mr. Global is gunning for, and Scalia clearly was in the way. So
bizarre story.
Yeah.
We'll follow that up. Okay. A new Federal Reserve member, he used to work for Goldman Sachs, is saying that we should break up the nation's largest banks to avoid any bailouts in the future. What does this guy know that we should know?
Actually, he's a president now. He's not a governor. He's a bank president.
Yeah, they've moved him up.
Well, here's this. This is a guy who was part of the team that poured unprecedented subsidy that grew the banks into the monsters we have today. So this is from the wonderful people who brought you Pearl Harbor, so to speak.
That's right.
So this is not a source that I trust as far as I could throw, unfortunately. Nobody does something like that, George, unless it's a trial balloon, unless they're exercising very poor judgment, because the way it was floated was kind of scary. And here's the thing, you're talking about radical surgery, and it's all in the details. And so the concept itself means nothing until you know what the details are. My fear is it simply doubles up into the pockets of the people, who got the last huge round of subsidy. So, this is an early trial balloon, but...
But the fact, he is calling for a breakup, that's bizarre, isn't it?
Well...
Or is it a setup?
Well, here's the thing, and if you've ever seen the movie Margin Call, it describes it perfectly. We now have a financial system which is trading entirely on the federal credit. And so once the government is providing essentially all the credit in the backstop, then you turn it into a utility. And that's the calls from a lot of people to break it up into the old, pre-Glass-Steagall, so you have the credit with low risk, and then any of the unregulated things have to be divorced from the federal credit. Because what the banks did ever since our friend Neil helped them do it is they're using the federal credit to finance a lot of speculative activities, which is really, it's bad for the economy.
Yeah, it sure is. And speaking of the economy, how has this year started? I mean, we've watched the stock market go up and down. It trickles up, then it drops big, then it goes back up, then it drops big. This is weird. We're only in the February.
This is a market that's very spooked by the uncertainty. And part of it, George, there are many different factors that we have a lot to talk about. But when you're moving from what's called a unipolar world, where you have one dominant player, the United States' empire, to a multipolar world, and, because we have other areas of the world who are growing, and there's a lot of sort of cooperation, but the competition can get negative, you get this great uncertainty. And for the last 8 years, we have centralized so much with quantitative easing and by leveraging the debt. And as a result, you have not let the markets reground. And so the markets are very uncertain. What they don't know is if the Band-Aid of quantitative easing really healed the problem or it just covered the symptoms and now it's all going to come up. So you have global investors that are spooked. And I'll tell you, I want to go through some of the factors because we need to talk about commodities.
Okay, we've got about 30 seconds, so let's do that after the break.
One of the things that has them really spooked is the U.S. presidential campaign.
Yeah, we'll talk about that too. Lots to talk about with Catherine Austin Fitz. Her website linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. It's Solari.com. And she is one marvelous guest and one great human being, by the way. We're all lucky to have her breathing air on this planet. Even if she sounds like a little frog tonight, we've got some great information for you when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. And we're talking with Catherine Austin Fitz, about your money and about what's going to happen. And she's got some great thoughts. We're going to get into the presidential campaign, and we'll talk about oil prices and some other little interesting tidbits in just a moment. Okay, welcome back to Coast to Coast. George Norrie with you, along with Catherine Austin Fitz, as we talk about your money, your future. What a strange presidential campaign to date, Catherine.
Well, you know, I love democracy when it's organic and emergent, but this one is dangerous, I think. Now all's well that ends well. We don't know how it comes out. But we've seen some things, George, that I think are really spooking investors. And part of it is, there's a great quote from the president of Luxembourg. He said, "We know what to do. We just don't know how to get elected after we do it." And one of the reasons you're seeing so much ridiculousness out of Washington, partisanship, is the gap between official reality and reality have never been greater. And, you know, I have to commend you because it's not, it would be greater if it were not for you and Coast to Coast. I think you have done a remarkable job trying to fill that gap, if you will. But the body politic is really in a state of high disassociation between how we think our money works and how it really works. But we saw in November the leading candidate, Donald Trump, on the Republican side basically say, you know, we should shut the borders to Muslims. What I think a lot of people don't realize is what 24% of the people in the world said, take your money and go home.
Mm-hmm.
And when 24% of the people decide to take their money out of a market, you know, you can see the kind of things we've been seeing. Now, at the same time, remember, commodities are coming down, and a lot of the big money in the equity market over the last 5 or 6 years has been the sovereign wealth funds, which tend to be, you know, you have big sovereign wealth funds in the Muslim country. So we've done a lot to really say to a tremendous, you know, trillions of dollars in the equity market, we don't want you, go home. And that's a little bit scary when you look at the polls. And if I'm a foreign investor, it was really funny when it happened, chills went down my spine. And I just said, you know, if I were a sovereign wealth fund in the Muslim countries, I'd get my money out. I wouldn't feel safe here. And that's for me to think that, because I tend to be very, you know, sort of calm about these things, you know, oh, it's just politics. That was pretty scary. And then we've also seen a lot of talk and posturing, both not just from the candidates, but in the polls and opinions in the polls, that really communicates to the world, you know, America is not under adult supervision. And because the U.S. federal budget and credit is so important to the financial system globally, that makes investors and markets nervous. So, on top of all the other risks going on that we have to talk about, leadership is critical. And in a period where you have this much change, if you don't have confidence in the leadership or the general population to support good leadership, you've got a big, big problem.
Well, and I think Russia, for example, China as well, with just the knowledge today of them putting in some surface-to-air missiles on these troubled islands, I think they're taking advantage of a weakness they see with us right now, don't you think?
Absolutely. Our biggest problem is that our friends don't trust us and our enemies don't respect us. And what you're watching, it's interesting, if you look at what's happening in South China Sea, the number one reason, of course, is the sea lanes in the South China Sea are critical to world power because so much trade goes through them. But the other thing is you've got big fishing waters. And if you look at a lot of the tensions, particularly in the ocean right now, people are fighting over the food and fishing. There was a great comment by a Chinese official in last year when the Chinese market really took a nosedive in August. Somebody asked a Chinese official if they were worried. They said, no, only 10% of the Chinese people invest in the stock market. But our big problem is pork is up 50% over the last two months, and everybody eats pork. So, you know, there's a lot of fighting very quietly going on in all these different hot spots over food and water, and which shows you, despite the real drop in commodities, there is real pressure of more and more people fighting over finite resources.
I think so, too. Now, one more question about the presidential campaign. and then we'll move into some oil. You know, we don't pick. We don't endorse on this program. We talk. We talk right. about the differences, the strange right. things, the conspiracies, as it relates to these campaigners as well. And this is a very weird election because I still think on the Republican end, as they wean down, something strange is going to happen here. As popular as Mr. Trump seems to be, I just think that you can't rule out Jeb Bush. And again, folks, this is not an endorsement because I don't support the candidates because I try to stay impartial. I just think something weird's going to happen.
Let's look at what you've got. You've clearly got, I think one of the healthy things happening in this campaign is the millennials who are now, in terms of numbers, you know, a pretty big group up against the boomers. The millennials are sick of same old, same old. And I think the problem that, both the Clintons and the Bushes have is there's a real, you know, disgust with same old, same old. And so they have legacy problems, I think, with population that really wants to see change. The other problem, frankly, is, and this is part of what's spooking investors, and I want to really underscore this, the presidency of the United States is not an entry-level position.
Right.
Okay.
Good point.
So if you were going to get a neurosurgeon for your mother, you would not get somebody who'd never done neurosurgery before.
The guy fresh out of college, huh?
Right. So the U.S. government, the federal budget and credit, and the U.S. government is a highly complex machinery. And one of the things you see more and more, you know, it's not surprising that the Secretary of Defense and the Chancellor of Germany are physicists. They're people who can deal with extraordinary complexity. And so you really cannot afford to have somebody with an entry-level position. I don't care how interesting or entertaining or wonderful they are, you know, it's you just don't do that. So that, and I think that is really spooking investors that it would be contemplated this long and this far by the population. So the question is, when you winnow down, what are you going to have? Now, what's been the one another positive thing I see about what's happened, George, is occasionally you have these little pieces of truth that slip out because people are trying to get attention.
Yeah.
So in the last debate, I don't know if you read it. I didn't see it, but I read the transcript. One of my clients forced me to go do it because I try and not watch too much. But you had Ben Carson say that the U.S. economy was on the verge of collapse. I couldn't stop laughing because it was, there are parts of the U.S. economy that are collapsing. You know, we've talked about it before.
Sure.
You know, because we're shifting. There's accelerating change technologically and globally, and it's really causing tremendous gaps across the country. And you do have parts of the economy that are collapsing. But, you know, that's a no-no for a presidential candidate to say. And yet the beauty of having entry-level position candidates is they're saying a lot of no-nos. And I think that's part of the appeal of Trump. You know, he comes out with things on, you know, 9/11 or vaccines that no one else will dare
yeah,
say.
He just says it. And yeah, people are tired of the status quo.
Right. They want people. They're sick of this gap between official reality and reality. But, you know, the gap between official reality and reality is not just in the candidates. It's in the public. So let me give you an example. You have a huge amount of Republicans supporting, according to the polls, this idea that we're going to be tough on letting Muslims in, not realizing you're saying that to a huge amount of the money in the world go away when you're financially dependent on that money. At the same time, you know, people are saying we don't want aggressive enforcement against money laundering, essentially saying we support marketing drugs to our neighbors' kids because we don't want the good times to end. So there's a you see a disconnect because there's not an understanding of how the money works. And so part of what I'm hoping will come out of this is a greater education of the general populace about how the money works. A lot more is going to have to slip out, and it's going to have to get a lot weirder. But, you know, I'm always optimistic. Now, we do have some people, you know, who really do think of themselves as public servants and can deal with complexity. It doesn't mean I agree with them. I would say that both Kasich and Sanders really see themselves as public service. O'Malley did, but he's dropped out. Jeb Bush, I think he has enormous number of endorsements and money. But if you look at his performance to date, I think the legacy issues, you know, are just going to bury him. If Clinton had the same kind of competition that he has, you know, they would bury her. So I don't know. I just think the legacy baggage is going to get tougher and tougher for both of them.
He's changed a lot, though. Jeb's changed. He's taken his glasses off.
Oh, really?
Have you noticed that?
No, I don't. You
oh,
know,
yeah, glasses are off.
Every 4 years, I find this process so depressing, George, because the general population keeps demanding that the, you know, we have an unvirtuous circle between, you know, the candidates promoting the Disney World vision of America and the population supporting that vision. You know, sort of just help me pretend and make sure I get my check. I really don't want to know. And our problems, we've reached a point where we have to re-engineer the federal budget and credit. We can't keep, you know, the Disney World thing isn't going to work anymore. And I think the problem with a lot of the candidates, if you take somebody like an O'Malley or a Kasich, you know, or even a Sanders, how do they start speaking about the truth without scaring people?
Exactly. Now, what do you think of oil prices? Is that good that the price of oil has gone down?
Well, here's the thing. It's good for some people and not for others. And the problem in the economy is, can you balance the two and not let the bad get out of hand? So let's look at it. If we had financed all of the tremendous growth in oil and gas reserves in the United States with equity, then people would just cut back production. But as you said earlier, you know, OPEC and the Russians are trying to get together and cut back production. The problem is everybody is up to their eyeballs in either overhead or debt.
Yep.
And you have so many both nations and companies that can't afford, you know, they're pumping below their finding cost.
They're almost losing money pumping.
They're losing money. They're even, you know, some of them are having to pay to just get it stored. So they're, you know, they're paying people to take it off their hands, but they need the revenues to cover their debt service because we've run up the debt. Both the commodity producers, so the frackers in the United States have run up the debt. But more importantly, George, since when we came into the bailouts, we had the developed world leverage, but not the emerging markets. And when we came into the bailouts, we levered up the emerging markets. That's been a big part of what kept the global economy going. A lot of those countries are commodity producers. They now have a huge amount of, are you ready, dollar-denominated debt. Not debt denominated in their own currency, dollar-denominated debt. Commodities are plunging, and the price of dollars are going up, and they're in a squeeze. I sometimes refer to it as a bear trap rally, and that's part of the reason for the strength in the dollar. And so, you know, there is a real squeeze going on in the commodity world, and it's making it difficult for commodity prices to adjust, or it's making it different to cut supply to get the prices to adjust, particularly in oil. I will tell you there's another thing that we really have to talk about, and that is something that Coast has really kept its audience abreast of. And, you know, one of the things we've all talked about, because we all know that the UFOs are not flying around on fossil fuel.
That's
so
right.
Somebody's got this technology. When was that technology going to be allowed to come out into the regular economy?
I don't think it will.
Well, let me just play devil's advocate here. You've got both China and Germany now saying that they have compact nuclear fission. You have Northrop Grumman and Lockheed now saying that they have it or will have it shortly.
We know we've got it. You know that.
Right. And so you have too many parties really moving forward with a much safer, much more economic kind of nuclear fusion. And you have tremendous developments in material sciences that are going to radically lower the cost of solar panels and really change the whole battery picture. And we see a lot of projections that solar is really going to become unbelievably economic, particularly 5 to 10 years out.
I mean, can you imagine flying from LA to New York in an hour?
Well, here's what you got to see. I don't know if you were watching the Super Bowl. Did you see the Boeing ad that ran right before the Super Bowl? It's up on my website, you know, because everybody thinks I'm so far out when I show them pictures of space elevator and colonies on Mars. Well, Boeing, I mean, here's the thing, George. The Super Bowl is the number one time you put a message in the heads of the men of
That's
America,
right.
right?
It's an expensive message, but you put one in there.
Right. They put so here's Boeing saying in 2116, 100 years from now, 100% of our energy is going to come from solar platforms in the orbital platform, which makes complete sense. I mean, the Japanese have announced a couple years ago they're working on it. I'm sure we're working on it. Makes total sense. But if you look at
endless supply.
Right, endless supply and really down to the cost.
You never have a cloudy sky up there, that's for sure.
So, remember, how does oil trade in the stock market? It trades according to, you know, it's the present value of the cash flows. And if those cash flows are 10 years instead of 100 years, it's going to have a dramatic impact in price. Because last year, remember, we expected oil, okay, maybe a 50% correction. This year so far, it's down 27%. That means it's down 80% over 2 years. And when I tell you the number of insiders who were surprised, when Cargill and Carlyle end up having to close funds and are completely surprised, you know, that gets very interesting. So I have to tell you that the depth of this has been a big surprise. Now, how much of this is just not new technology or not global slowdown, but us playing the Russian card? Because you know we did this in the 80s as part of what brought the, you know, the
brought the Soviets down. That's right.
Brought the Soviet down. So, and it was very, you've had Jim Norman on Coast to Coast, and he's done a great, great job, great reporter of explaining what happened. You know, clearly that's part of it, clearly global slowdown. So you have a perfect storm hitting oil, and, you know, it's anybody's guess. A lot of when it comes out and how it comes out is the how they deal with the credit destruction and the problems with the debt is part of why the banks are having trouble globally, because if you look at bank stocks, they're way off. There's real fear about how much debt is. You know, if you look at, it's really funny, if you look at how the Fed did quantitative easing and how that compares to the growth of debt to finance the fracking, it's almost like somebody, you know, the Secretary of Treasury turned to the Federal Reserve Chairman and said, pump the money out. We want to create, you know, national self-sufficiency in oil and gas and just keep pumping until they've done it and then shut it off.
I love
and
it.
And that's exactly what it was. I'm not saying that happened, but that's, you know, quantitative easing really drove our domestic reserves into a very plush position, which strategically makes us much stronger.
Catherine, when we come back, I want to talk with you about the possibility of war, either with Russia, China, Iran, who knows, because it just feels like something like that could happen. And then we'll take phone calls next on Coast to Coast AM.